Dan Tucker, you asked me a great question and I promised I would get back to you in an audio, and it's taken me so long to do that, I do apologise, but you had a fantastic question and we agreed that I could answer you on a public forum simply because your question is pertinent to a lot of other people, specifically photographers. You and I are both photographers and you had a question about finding new work, connecting with new customers. And it's a brilliant question because I think a lot of people are struggling with it at the moment, and it might seem an obvious question, but it's one that maybe we don't ask enough of each other as photographers to find out what maybe other people are doing to get new business. Now, there is a caveat to this answer, and I think it's really, really important. When I talk about getting new business, or when any other photographer talks about getting new business and how they go about it, you have to take it, not with a pinch of salt, but you have to take it through your own filter, because, and I think this is quite important, what works for one photographer is not going to work for another photographer, and there could be a multitude of reasons for that. We're all different people. Certain things appeal to us better than or more than other things, and we're just better at other things. At some things than other things. And so my answer is going to be very kind of personal, relating to me answer. So this is the kind of thing that I do. Now that will give others a suggestion, but just blindly copying what another photographer does, be it me, be it somebody else, may not work for you. You need to take their advice and tailor it to your own situation and pass it, like I say, through your own filter. A good example is, for instance, when we look at pricing, you know, we tend as photographers to look at what other photographers are charging and then sort of model our own pricing maybe along similar lines. And actually that doesn't work because we don't know the specific circumstances of that photographer in question. Maybe their spouse works, which means that they can charge less for their photography because they don't have to cover as much of the household income and the household spend as a photographer whose wife or spouse or husband doesn't work. So without knowing the specifics of somebody's circumstance, the advice they give is a little bit, I won't say dangerous, but you just need to be aware of that. So that's the first point. You need to be aware that anything I say is pertinent to my situation and pertinent to the way I am as a human being. Secondly, equally important, is you need to understand that I am a dreadful business person. Absolutely shocking. I'm not a great person in business. I struggle, like I think many photographers do. I have friends who are much, much better at the business side of photography than I am. So that, again, there's another caveat. Just be aware that I'm not the greatest business person around. I am trying through many channels, one of which is the Business Jazz podcast, to figure out what are the things that I need to be doing in business to make myself, as the slogan of that particular podcast goes, genuinely attractive in business. And it's, for me, it's a journey, it's a learning process. It doesn't mean that I have all the answers. And yeah, I have a big mouth and I have my own podcasts, but none of that means that I have answers that will genuinely stand up to scrutiny from genuine business experts. Okay, so you just need to bear that in mind as well. So having got those two caveats out of the way, what is it that I do to generate new business? Well, first of all, I think it's very important that you start from a foundation of your own vision and voice. A vision and voice, I mean, that is a tutorial in its own right. I mean, that is a day just doing the fundamentals, and then you could turn that into easily into a week's workshop to get from what is your vision and what is your voice. Well, what do I mean by vision and voice? Your vision is how you see the world, your interpretation of the world, your value set, your ethics, your morals, all that kind of good stuff that makes up who you are. That's your DNA, if you like. And then your voice, in a photographic sense, is how you express that vision. So it might be that you're a documentary photographer like I am, or you might be a portraitist, or you might be a landscape photographer. And through that medium, then you're going to use certain techniques. So for instance, I'm a documentary photographer, and one of the elements of my voice is often wide angle lenses or photographs that show lots of context around the subject. That's my way of showing and telling stories. I use reflections an awful lot, mirrors, reflections in windows, that sort of thing. Again, that's kind of part and parcel of my voice, if you like. So those are those are the two fundamentals on which you build your vision and your voice, your beliefs, what you stand for, and then how you, I suppose, broadcast that through photography, how you capture a photograph using the techniques that are peculiar to you, that you like. I mean, some photographers use lenses that cut out an awful lot of a scene because they just want to focus in on a particular part of the scene, on the action itself, and that's equally legitimate, and that's peculiar to their, you know, specific to their voice, if you like. That's step one. Now, when you've got that, you're actually in quite a strong position because it does set you apart from everybody else, because you will have quite a unique voice and quite a unique vision. And nobody else will have those, so therefore nobody can compete with you. Again, a whole different kind of podcast there. Not really got the time to go into it here. But when you have those foundations, it makes it easier to do a number of things. First of all, it makes it easier to identify the area that you want to work in. You'll be drawn to specific things. So in my case, I'm drawn to documentary photography, storytelling photography, genuine moments, nothing set up, etc., etc. But at the same time, I have a fascination with food. So I'm moving in that direction where I'm trying to do documentary food projects. Now, I'll also do still life photography for food, because it's kind of part of that industry as well, and it's where it's easiest to go in and get commissions. Now, I'm not saying it's easy to get commissions, but it's easier if you're approaching the market with a product they already understand. Now, but what about the other side of it? What about the you know, you've developed something unique and particular to you. How do you market that? Well, let me give you an example. I'll tell you a story about how I did a documentary project behind the scenes at a 5-star hotel resort here in Cork. I did this at Fodor Island Resort. And the way I'd thought about it and then decided who to approach was this. I wanted to show what goes on behind the scenes at a hotel, and specifically, you know, upmarket 5-star hotel, because the story of hotels is not about the rooms. The story of the hotels is about the people. So I found a 5-star hotel in my area that I could approach and say to them, and this was almost verbatim was the pitch, when I go on your website, and when I go on the website of any 5-star hotel, I see beautifully photographed rooms. But the thing is, I'm going to be staying at a 5-star hotel. The rooms had better be beautiful. You know, the restaurant had better look stunning. All these things. It's a 5-star hotel. I expect that. What sets the hotel apart is the experience of the staff. The staff make the experience in the 5-star hotel. So why don't we photograph the staff doing their jobs? And Fota understood this. The marketing director and the sales director, they completely understood what I was getting at. And also they had the right culture, which is very important for this kind of project. They had the right corporate culture in which they trusted implicitly their employees. So if there was somebody walking around behind the scenes, they knew their employees weren't going to embarrass them, weren't going to talk ill of them, weren't going to show up the company in any way. They trusted their employees, and so it was. So I was able to photograph behind the scenes at Fodor Island Resort and access all areas and take photographs of what I wanted to take photographs of. And we got a great series of images of the staff doing their jobs. Are those photographs more interesting than photographs of beautifully lit and beautifully composed rooms? Absolutely. Do they connect better with people when they're looking at a website? Yes. And also, of course, it's different. You come across a 5-star hotel where suddenly, yeah, okay, the rooms are fantastic, but hey, we're concentrating also on the people. So what I did there was, based on how I see the world and how I want to take photographs, identified an industry where I thought that my approach would make a difference and where my approach would benefit the client in terms of helping them set themselves apart from their competition online. So it was a very focused approach and a very successful one. And that's an approach that ironically has worked well for me every single time I've done it. But I have to be honest, and there's a bit of a realization for me as well, so it's good for me to be recording this and saying these things. I haven't done it for a while. And, well, I say I haven't done it for a while. I'm actually in the process of doing it. I've just realized, kind of unconsciously, I'm in the process of doing it again. I'm developing a product. In this case, it's a video product, a video service for a particular segment of the food industry. And I'm going to use that. So I've produced a pilot and that went really well. Very pleased with the result. And then I'm going to use that to go to other businesses. In this particular case, I'm talking about restaurants. Not trying to be obtuse or vague. But this is a thing for restaurants. And I want to show it to them. And I have a specific script in mind for the pitch. And I do work with scripts. So doesn't mean I just recite verbatim what I have in my head. But if I have a script in my mind of the things I want to say, then I can let a conversation naturally flow and at certain points take hold of the conversation, take command of the conversation, and use the script to get my story across and get across how useful and different this particular service is for, in this the case that's coming up, restaurants. So it's a case of, what was I saying? It's a case of figuring out, based on your voice and your vision and your voice, why your service is different and what it is that you can do for a client, and then to identify the kind of clients that you want to approach with this service, and then to pick up the phone and make those connections. It's a complex process to a certain extent. It's certainly a time-consuming process, but the hit rates I found, and again, I have to stress this is what's worked for me because this is the kind of person I am, but I found that the hit rate there has been fairly good. I specifically went after a transport company, and my pitch to them was, I want to show the bit of magic in between the package being collected at the client and the package being delivered at the door of the recipient. I want to show that magic in between. And I had my facts and my figures about that industry ready, so I was able to say, I think is UPS the biggest? This is a while ago that I did this now. I think UPS is the biggest, and I think they handle about 4 billion packages a year. If I don't quote me on this, because I'm trying to scrabbling around at the back of my mind, trying to remember whether this is actually the figures. I think it's correct. Around 4 billion packages a year are handled by UPS. And you know, I would say a fraction of that go astray. I don't know. UPS could probably tell you. But whatever the number is, it's going to be, you know, 0.00 something of a percentage point. It's just going to be ludicrously few compared to the volume of packages that they manage. So I went to a transport logistics company with the idea of photographing the bit in the middle, the bit we don't see, because we often see the vans delivering and the vans collecting, but we don't see the bit in between. And what happened, the first few companies I approached just weren't interested. And Chase Jarvis, a Seattle-based photographer, I think he's also has a representation in Paris. And if you don't know Chase Jarvis, please Google him, follow him. He is where, stop listening to somebody like me. Please go and follow Chase. Chase is somebody you should really look at, and also does an awful lot to, he does two things. He does a lot of things to help other photographers, and he also does a lot of things first, and they genuinely pay off. He's a fascinating man to follow, And like I say, stop listening to me immediately. Google Chase Jarvis, follow him, see what he's up to. You'll learn far more. But anyway, sorry, that was a bit of a tangent. So what did Chase Jarvis say? Chase Jarvis said, if you're not hearing no enough, you're not trying enough. Something along those lines. You need to be hearing a lot of no's, because the more you hear no, it's just a reflection of the more you're trying, the harder you're trying. If you're hearing a lot of no's, it means you're really, you know, you're pushing a lot of people with your ideas. Does it guarantee you'll hear yeses? No, absolutely not. But if you're not hearing no's, then quite likely you're not hearing yeses either. So the first few transport companies I approached just didn't buy into the idea at all. But then I did find one that did. So tailoring projects to clients or to client groups is, I've found a very effective way, and I just need to do more of it. The drawback is it's time consuming. But I will be honest with you, looking back, pretty much any time that I've come up with an idea, identified a market segment that I want to work with, and then approach companies in that market segment, it's worked. What else do I do to generate business? Old-fashioned cold calling, old-fashioned approaching agencies, for instance, marketing agencies and ad agencies, web design agencies. I'm doing a bit more of that at the moment. I'm very bad at, I'll tell you, this is what I'm bad at. I will make the initial approach. I may even get that meeting. And then where I fall down is that I don't stay in touch after that initial meeting. One meeting is not going to do it. One meeting is not going to get you on anybody's radar unless you're a genius, unless you've walked in with a portfolio of stuff that's made people go, oh my God, where have you been all our lives? This is just amazing. You should always aspire to having a portfolio that does that. But for most of us, it's going to take those follow-up meetings. So one lesson I've learned is make the initial contact and then stay in touch. Look out as well for networking opportunities, business opportunities. So for instance, in Cork, we've just had Cork Meet, which was organised by, I forget who it was organised by, doesn't really matter, but it was an event at which over 2 days you had 16 structured meetings with companies that you either wanted to connect with or who wanted to connect with you. That's a great idea. Networking organisations such as BNI, I know there are others. I have experience of BNI and did find it very useful. The thing about BNI is it is a big commitment, but it can work fantastically well for you. Seriously, it can. But you just need to find out whether you're the kind of person who can fit. But BNI is quite strict and quite regimental, so you need to find out whether you're the kind of person who can fit into that. So I was in BNI for 4 or 5 years, and it did benefit me, I will say that. Why did I leave? I just had other commitments going on, and I wasn't any more getting out of it what I was putting in, so I had to make a decision. I decided to leave. What other things can you do? Conferences, trade shows. I remember ringing a photographer for a piece of advice on pricing. I had to figure out what to charge a commercial client, and I wasn't quite sure. And there was a photographer who I respect greatly, a bit of a name here in Ireland. I tell you who he is, but I'm not sure he'd want me to. Some people just aren't that keen. But I rang him, and he was either, I think he was in an airport. I think he was in an airport in Zurich. And the reason he was there, he was on his way to a big trade show, watches, I think it was, watches, jewellery, that sort of thing. And that's very much one of his client bases, was watch manufacturers and jewellery makers and that sort of thing. It was one of the two, I can't remember. We'll say it was watches. So I was chatting to him, and he helped me out with the pricing of the project I needed to do an estimate for. And I asked him, what are you doing? Where are you travelling to? And he said he was off to this trade show. And I, didn't quite understand why he'd be going to this trade show. I thought maybe he's got a watch fetish or something. But he explained to me that this is where his client base is. And it was like a bolt of lightning had hit me. It was like, oh my God, how obvious is this? Somebody else has organised an event, a trade show, at which all the people that I would love to do business with are going to attend. So does it make sense as a photographer to go along to the trade show and get a pass to attend and go in and then go around all the stands and establish relationships with people I want to do business with? What a great idea. Go to conventions, go to trade shows where your clients are going to be. Now, word to the wise, don't go in there trying to sell, pick up business on the spot, because chances are it's not going to happen, and chances are you're just going to piss somebody off, you're just going to upset them, because you're going to come across pushy. But it is a great place to meet people. Do you know what another great place to meet people is? And then build on the relationship. And here's something that I heard at a BNI conference one day. Build the relationship. If you build the relationship, the business will follow. And I think that was Frank Duraffoli said that. So building relationships is really, really important. One thing that BNI teaches you is build the relationships, don't focus on the business. The business will come. And how do you build relationships? Well, within BNI, the relationship building is based on giving. If you go around the place giving as much as you can to other people, well, guess what? They're going to want to give back to you. It's just the natural order of things. There is an anthropological study on this. There's a book called The Gift, and I think it's by somebody called Durkheim. I should know. I think the equivalent of a master's degree in economic and environmental anthropology. So this is one of the things that I had on my reading list. And I remember having an oral exam about this particular book. But The Gift, and what does The Gift say? Well, if you give somebody something, or if you receive something, that creates a bond, and it creates an act that needs to be balanced out. People will naturally want to help you as well. We're just hardwired that way. Also, the thinking goes. And in some cases it's true, and in some cases it isn't. But much better, I think, to believe that it is true, and that most people will respond very well to being helped. We were talking about networking, yes, and the other environment where this really works, and that's social media. So I'm quite busy on social media. Again, it's one of those environments where I have a very clear idea of what I should be doing. I don't always follow through with it. Social media is fantastic. Twitter, Facebook, I'm not a great Facebook fan, but you know, if you're on Facebook, Google Plus, all these places are really good platforms to make connections. And what you shouldn't do is what I saw today. I'm not very often on my Facebook account, but I went in today and I had a litany of people trying to sell me courses, trying to sell me tutorials, trying to invite me to some stupid games. Why would you want to invite me to these poker games? But it was particularly on the business side that I was just being sold to. And it was like, these people have made no other attempt to reach out to me other than to sell me stuff, other than to try and make me buy their lighting course or their portraiture course or their, neuro-linguistic programming seminar or whatever the hell. And that's not how it works. You need to build those relationships. And once you've built those relationships, then the business will follow. And how do you build relationships on social media? Retweet people's content, engage with them on forums, leave comments on blogs, try and be helpful, link to useful content, all that good stuff, and genuinely engage with people. And then from there, they will go back to your mothership, your website, or what have you, and sell to them there. Do I have this from myself? No, I don't. I already mentioned Chase Jarvis. Well, somebody else you should go and follow straight away. If you haven't already stopped listening to me, stop now. Google Chris Brogan and go and listen to Chris Brogan. Chris is great on this kind of stuff. I had another thought and it's popped out of my head. Hang on a sec. Oh, yes, yes, yes. I started a blog called Cork Foodie, and I have this interest in food. And the plan behind it was this. I start writing about food, and I start writing about local food producers here in Cork, and we are blessed here in Cork with an incredible depth and breadth of artisan food producers, and a segment that really fascinates me and really interests me. I thought, well, if I start writing about these people, I can start building relationships. So I did. So I'd go along to farmers markets and I'd meet people and I'd hear their stories and we'd talk and we'd chat and I built up relationships. And the whole idea was just to, in a non-pushy, non-commercial kind of way, introduce myself into that world and become known as the guy who writes stuff and who takes photographs and now shoots video and all this and does audio. And that could be useful to people. And I did. I got a couple of commissions. And for reasons I won't go into here now, because I have less than 4 minutes left to round up my rather long-winded answer to Dan, I kind of had to let that go. I kind of had to back away from it, like I say, for various reasons. And I wasn't able to dedicate the time to it. And I know that if I had dedicated the time to it, that I would have made better inroads, and I'm going back into that space. The only problem I have now, of course, is that by going in before and then having to retreat to an extent, that will have cost me credibility. I know that, and I accept that, and I appreciate that. So, again, when you do these things, you have to kind of be able to commit for the long term, and I just had something that tripped me up and I wasn't able to commit for the long term as much as I would like to have done. I have 3 minutes left to give you some other ideas of things you can do to attract business. So there are things you can do for yourself. It would be very proactive, identify people, go to them and say, this is what I can do for you and this is how I can help you, and have you thought of maybe doing this, because it will set you apart from your other clients. I've talked about networking, raising your profile in general, and raising your profile in general, that's the long game. That's the long game. You know, nobody is going to come directly to you, within a couple of months of you sort of going onto social networks and helping people and gradually raising your profile. It takes a little while. But one of the things that you can do in addition to that is good deeds, if you like. Together with Paul Omani, I did the first Help Portrait events here in Ireland, and that raised my profile to an extent. Not massively, don't get me wrong, it's not a massive thing. And it's also, very importantly, not the reason why you do these things, but it can help. So actually going out there, giving back to your community, trying to do some good in the community does, in the end, I believe, come back to you. It's all karma, I think. It's all karma. And if you're out there trying to make a difference, then, you know, people will see that. And that will be appealing to a certain group of clients, and, you know, they may come looking for you. But it's a long-term thing. Not something you should be doing for short-term gain, and certainly if you're going to be doing kind of charity things, it's not something you should be doing with commerce in mind. It's something you should be doing because you want to do it, and, you know, if something personally good of it comes for you, well, great, but, you know, don't expect it to. I think that's kind of pretty much all I have. Take from it what you will, pass it through your own filter, understand that I'm not the greatest business person around, understand that I'm trying to learn how to be really attractive in business as well. And very quickly, because I have 45 seconds, podcasting. I do podcasting, which I hope raises my profile and raises my credibility as a documentary photographer or as a food person. Anyway, those are my thoughts. Dan, great question. I hope that was useful, and I hope I haven't just wasted half an hour of your life.